This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 5th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 215. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. The Is It Just Me commentary. And on the Big Deal feature, special guest Benedict Rogers of Hong Kong Watch and the Interparliamentary Alliance on China. Will Canadian athletes be safe at the Beijing 2022 Olympics? Should Canada boycott Xi Jinping's party? This and more on the Big Deal feature. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the BC NDP government showing more arrogance day after day? Instead of pausing the fall session of the legislature, they kept on going during the state of emergency as people in Abbotsford, Merritt, and Princeton dealt with devastating floods. No sooner had the fall session ended on November 25th, then Citizens Services Minister Lisa Baer and Environment Minister George Heyman signed the cabinet order to impose a $10 tax on freedom of information requests. The NDP rammed through Bill 22 on the last day, cutting off debate and rejecting goodwill amendments from the BC Liberals and the BC Greens. If only the NDP was as quick to warn the public about extreme weather events in late June and mid-November. The party was planning a December 1st in-person fundraiser in Port Moody with David Eby and Rick Lumack. They were going to toast all the great things that happened in 2021, until the Breaker.News started asking questions about how tone-deaf they were. The event was quietly cancelled. Langley MLA Megan Dykeman is planning to go ahead with a pub fundraiser on December 8th in Fort Langley, so close to Abbotsford where so many people have lost everything. MLA Bob Deeth was named a Queen's Counsel on the annual list of the Attorney General's favorite lawyers. And Naveen Gurn, an ethnic outreach aide in Premier John Horgan's office, got rewarded with a 10% pay raise to $125,000 a year. The NDP have also spent 2021 pissing off its environmental and Indigenous supporters, and even the parents of autistic children. Haven't we seen this movie before? It climaxed in 2001, with the NDP losing all but two seats. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Less than 2 months until the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. Human rights activists say the Chinese capital has no business hosting the Games due to a myriad of human rights abuses, including the treatment of Tibetans, the crackdown on free speech in Hong Kong, threats to invade Taiwan, and of course, the Uyghur genocide. Joining me to talk about the latest is Benedict Rogers, a London-based journalist and human rights activist. He is the co-founder of Hong Kong Watch and an advisor to the Interparliamentary Alliance on China. He's the author of a forthcoming book from Optimum Publishing about Xi Jinping's all-out assault on human rights. I started the interview by asking Benedict Rogers about Hong Kong. China promised it would be business as usual for 50 years after the 1997 handover, but little by little, free speech has been snuffed out in the home to the most Canadians outside of Canada.
What do you say to the Canadian government and Canadians outside of Hong Kong about the situation that is happening there and has happened and what we should be doing about it?
Well, I would say that the situation is dire and getting worse by the day. Hong Kong has changed within a very short space of time, within just a year or two, pretty much beyond all recognition. I mean, physically it's recognizable, but in terms of the way of life, it's changed very significantly. I mean, in addition to the examples you gave, in recent weeks we've seen The Economist journalist have her journalist visa withdrawn. We've seen Amnesty International announce the closure of their office because they don't feel it's safe for them any longer. And that's just extraordinary in the city that was supposed to remain free and open and autonomous. under an international treaty signed between China and Britain, the Sino-British Joint Declaration. So my message to Canada would be, this is a desperate erosion of freedom, and Canada, along with its allies in the international community, particularly the United Kingdom, which has a special responsibility for Hong Kong, but also the United States, Australia, European countries, and other Asian democracies, should really unite and work together to make it clear to China that it can't be allowed to get away with this without consequences. It can't destroy freedoms that it itself had promised under an international treaty with impunity. Because if we allow them to get away with what they've done with no consequences, then they'll just be emboldened to do even worse to Hong Kong, but also to become ever more aggressive to Taiwan, the South China Sea, and ultimately our own freedoms. So Hong Kong is the front line of freedom, and we have a responsibility to the people of Hong Kong, but also to ourselves, to do everything we can to put pressure on China to stop any further erosion of Hong Kong's freedoms.
Canada's House of Commons condemned the Uyghur genocide in the first half of 2021. Meanwhile, in the second half of the year, the world is fearing China will invade Taiwan.
Where do you think things are heading as we're ending 2021 and getting into 2022?
Well, I think the situation with Taiwan has clearly escalated very dramatically and dangerously. It's hard to make an accurate prediction of where things are heading, but certainly, if you'd said to me a few years ago that conflict over Taiwan was likely, I would have been quite skeptical. I previous Chinese Communist Party regimes, no matter how much they wanted Taiwan, took a more pragmatic approach. But Xi Jinping is clearly not taking a pragmatic approach, and he's already picked fights on so many different fronts simultaneously with India, over Hong Kong, in the South China Sea, and elsewhere. So I'm very concerned, and I think that we need to keep delivering very clear messages to Beijing that if they were to even think of trying to take Taiwan by force, the democratic world would have to stand by Taiwan, and not just stand by Taiwan rhetorically or even with sanctions, but actually stand with Taiwan to defend it.
Impacts of the pandemic have led to global supply chain problems, including scarcity of valuable computer chips, which are a huge industry in Taiwan.
Where do you think that is heading? From the supply chain crunch, because China in many ways still is the factory of the world, as well as Taiwan, which is the factory for computer chips.
Well, that's a really important issue. And I think one of the lessons that people are beginning to learn and beginning to wake up to after the pandemic is the need to diversify our supply chains and not be so reliant on one particular market, i.e. China. And that's all the more reason why we should do everything possible to prevent a Chinese invasion and takeover of Taiwan, because if China had a monopoly on computer chips by seizing Taiwan, that would make the world an even more dangerous place. So we need to be diversifying our supply chains in all sorts of areas and preventing a Chinese takeover of Taiwan, as much for our own self-interest as for the values of democracy and open society that Taiwan stands for.
Getting closer to the Beijing Winter Olympics, which are a centerpiece of Beijing's ambitions. The 2008 Summer Olympics were supposed to be about China opening up and engaging with the West. The Olympics in Beijing will be the most controversial since Adolf Hitler's 1936 Olympics in Germany. The world naively believed that the 2008 Olympics would open China up and maybe help it become democratic someday. But today, Xi Jinping has world domination on his mind.
There's been talk recently of a diplomatic boycott. Is that enough to send a message to China, keeping diplomats and world leaders away from the opening ceremony and other events? Is that enough, or is that just, is that going to have any impact whatsoever?
I think it's not enough, but it's certainly an important starting point. So at a minimum, we should have a diplomatic boycott, and that should mean not just diplomats not attending, but we should make sure that no government official, no dignitary, no member of the royal family, anything like that. But I think we need to go further. I mean, this is a regime that stands accused of genocide, has dismantled freedom in Hong Kong, is committing all the atrocities in Tibet and throughout China. In an ideal world, the games should be moved. Clearly, at this late stage, it's unrealistic to see that happening. The IOC clearly doesn't have the will to do that. But I think there should be, on top of a diplomatic boycott, a consumer boycott. I think people shouldn't go to China. They probably can't anyway because of COVID at the moment. But if they were, people shouldn't go to the games as spectators. And most importantly, they should boycott the corporate sponsors of the games. So any corporate sponsors that are still going ahead with sponsoring the games in China, we should have a consumer boycott. I don't personally support an athlete's boycott, a sporting boycott per se, because I recognize that for the athletes, this is a huge event in their careers. They've trained for a long time for it. But I would appeal to athletes to examine their own consciences. And I think it is a matter of conscience for each individual athlete. Those who decide courageously to pull out, I think, should be applauded. Those who decide to participate should think about what they can do to use the platform that they have as public personalities, as athletes, following the games. Of course, they shouldn't do anything in China because that would be pretty dangerous for them. But after the games, they should think about what they can do to speak out. And also, I think, if assuming the games go ahead, we should be using every media platform possible around the coverage of the games to talk about not the games, but the issues in China surrounding the games.
My interview with Benedict Rogers took place on the 18th of November, just when the world was wondering if tennis star Peng Shuai had been arrested by Chinese authorities. She eventually surfaced and spoke with the IOC president, Thomas Bach, but now the Women's Tennis Association believes she is in danger after accusing a former vice premier of China of sexually assaulting her. I asked Benedict Rogers of Hong Kong Watch if athletes who go to Beijing 2022 are safe.
If an athlete says the wrong thing, a wrong thing according to the opinion of the Communist Party leadership, offends them in any way, could that athlete not make it home to their home country? Could that athlete be arrested or something else happening to the athlete? And shouldn't that be a reason why athletes and delegations take a second look about this, about whether they really should be going to Beijing?
Absolutely, it should. I mean, if the regime can effectively, seemingly abduct their top tennis player for making a complaint about sexual abuse, and she's appeared to have disappeared. She's a statement has been put out in her name, but it's extremely suspicious as to whether that statement really came from her. If a regime can do that to one of its own athletes, I think that it's perfectly capable of posing a danger to athletes from around the world, and not just those who may say the wrong thing whilst they're in China during the games, but there may well be athletes who've said something in the past that the regime will hold against it and cause a problem for them. And also, let's not forget, and I mean, Canadians know this more than anyone else with the case of the two Michaels, this is a regime that engages in hostage diplomacy. And if there was at the time of the games a particular dispute between the Chinese regime and another country, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that an athlete from that country could become a hostage. So the answer to your question is yes, athletes should take a second look at it, because there are very real dangers in going to China.
It has been more than 2 months since the day Meng Wanzhou went home to China and the two Michaels came home to Canada. The drama happened just days after the federal election, in which two conservative incumbents in Richmond were defeated in a coordinated United Front campaign in favor of Liberal candidates.
Were you watching that situation? And what do you think the Canadian government should do about it now that we've got some evidence of foreign meddling in a couple of key ridings that have a very large large Chinese diaspora, as well as a substantial amount of people from Hong Kong that came here to get away from the Beijing regime.
Yeah, I was watching that fairly closely, and I know Kenny Chu personally, and was extremely sorry that he was subjected to that and that he lost his seat. I think that this is a big problem for, I think, for most Western democracies, but Canada is at the forefront of this. In a very small way, I myself have been subjected to low-level harassment over the last few years. I won't go into details, but even in coming to Canada, I've directly experienced it in the few days that I've been here. And so I think it's something that we all need to wake up to and address. Exactly what Canada should do about it, I don't want to tell Canada what to do, but I certainly think the Canadian government should firstly completely reevaluate its entire relationship with the Chinese government and be aware of not just the threat to our values, but the threat to our national security in both our countries, and to really try to review the electoral system and review the opportunities for infiltration and influence. It's I don't pretend it's an easy thing to do. And one thing that's very important is, and I always say this when I speak about China, is it's really important to try to distinguish between the Chinese Communist Party regime and the Chinese people. This must never become an anti-Chinese issue or an anti-China issue. And I myself, you know, have many Chinese friends. I love China. I would say I'm pro-China as a country and as a people. I'm anti the CCP. So making that distinction is important. Engaging the Chinese community who share the values of democracy is important, but trying to identify as much as possible those within the Chinese community who are with the United Work Front Department and who are trying to subvert democracy is essential. Exactly how you do that, there are people probably more qualified than me to say how, but I think it's critical that we tackle this challenge.
That was Benedict Rogers, co-founder of Hong Kong Watch and an advisor to the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China. Go to hongkongwatch.org for more information.
Podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Mainichi News, 100,000 boxes of unused cloth masks procured by Japan government unveiled to media in Tokyo. Amid reports that over 80 million cloth masks, including those procured by the Japanese government's Abeno Mask Program, have gone unused, the health ministry has shown the Mainichi Shimbun a storage facility containing about 100,000 boxes of masks. Since March 2020, the health ministry spent $354 million on masks. In the Taiwan news, China hunted over 600 Taiwanese overseas. Safeguard Defenders has alleged that China is hunting Taiwanese all over the world. Safeguard Defenders stated that it has recorded more than 600 cases of Taiwanese being deported from Asian, African, and European countries between 2016 and 2019. Rather than returning them to their home country, Beijing is pressuring foreign governments to forcibly send Taiwanese to China, where they have no roots and no families. In ABC News Australia, Senator Alex Antic taken to COVID-19 Medi-Hotel to quarantine after arriving from Canberra. Antic says he was directed to quarantine at an Adelaide Medi-Hotel after arriving from Canberra on December 1st. From November 23rd, unvaccinated travelers are only allowed into South Australia with an exemption, and they must quarantine for 14 days. But last week, Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Mr. Antic was vaccinated. Antic has been withholding his vote in federal parliament in protest against state vaccination mandates. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Welcome to the newest Patreon supporter of the Breaker.News and the Breaker.News podcast, The Independent Contractors and Businesses Association, which is hosting Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson on April 26th in Vancouver. For information and tickets to the annual ICBA Gala, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865. In the Fraser Valley Current, the bureaucracy and the flood. Disaster hits the valley's rural communities. Local officials say they begged the province for help to stop the Coquihalla River from destroying Othello Road. They checked in every day but didn't hear back. By the time the province finally agreed to finance the urgent work on November 26th, the river had already destroyed two homes and part of the road. Now the Fraser Valley Regional District is urging the province to act quicker to help residents in rural areas. In KGMI Bellingham, county's flood response shifting to recovery process. The Sheriff's Department reports more than 700 homes were damaged and many remain uninhabitable. About 40 people are still in emergency shelters. The Whatcom Community Foundation has set up a resiliency fund to help those impacted by the floods. In the Oregonian, Reser Stadium's west side will come down by implosion on January 7th. Oregon State University and the $153 million Reser Stadium West Side renovation team decided to bring down the aging grandstand by implosion. One of the Northwest's most famous construction implosions was the Seattle Kingdome in 2000. The Reser implosion will be shown via live stream with viewing information coming prior to the event. The biggest sports superstar in Cascadia, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, is coming to Vancouver on April 26th. Get in the huddle at the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association annual banquet. For information and tickets, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the elves at the Lower Mainland Christmas Bureau, helping put presents under the tree for needy children since 1930. To donate toys, gifts, or money, go to lmcb.ca. That's lmcb.ca for the Lower Mainland Christmas Bureau. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 5th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 5th in 1952, the Great Smog of London, the first of 5 days of severe air pollution, more than 4,000 people died after coal fumes mixed with cold, windless air? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.